Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
When I was a boy, I used to read all about Edison and the Wright brothers, Mr. Ford. They were my heroes. Rags to Riches, that's not just the name of a book. That's what this country was all about. We invented the free enterprise system, where anybody, no matter who he was, where he came from, what class he belonged to, if he came up with a better idea about anything, there's no limit to how far he could go. I grew up a generation too late, I guess, because now the way the system works, the loner, the dreamer, the crackpot who comes up with some crazy idea that everybody laughs at, that later turns out to revolutionize the world, he's squashed from above before he even gets his head out of the water, because the bureaucrats, they'd rather kill a new idea than let it rock the boat. If Benjamin Franklin were alive today, he'd be thrown in jail for sailing a kite without a license. It's true.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan.
And I'm Tim.
So welcome to 15 Minute Film Fanatics, the podcast where two lifelong friends and film fanatics watch movies separately and talk about them on the show for the first time. So Tim is a big friend of the pod. He's been on it before, and he's here now because Mike just had a baby. So Tim's here while Mike is on paternity leave. We want to give a shout out to Mike and say congratulations.
Congratulations to Mike, and I hope I can fill his shoes temporarily.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. So what we're doing is we're going to do a two-part series here with the theme is that these are two movies that Tim has been trying to get me to see for decades, that just out of like recalcitrance or just laziness, I just never got around to it. And it would come up every couple of years. Did you see this yet? So the first of these movies is, what movie are we doing today, Tim?
Tucker, the Man and His Dream.
We're doing Tucker, the Man and His Dream. Now, this movie, like the other movie we're going to do, also stars Mako.
That is correct.
Yeah, so that's a little teaser for next week's episode. So the first movie we're going to do is Tucker, the Man and His Dream, 1988, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, of course, written by David Seidler and Arnold Schulman. Tim has been defending this movie and all things 80s Coppola for years. And when I asked him to come on, he said, okay, we're doing Tucker. This is it. You're doing Tucker. So I finally got around to seeing it. I thought it was terrific, but I'm going to start with you, Tim. In part one, we talk about our overall take. Tim, what is it about this movie that makes you recommend it to people?
Well, it's a genuine crowd pleaser. It's as genuine a crowd pleaser as you are likely to find. It's the story of Preston Tucker, who created a new car called the Tucker Torpedo in Ypsilanti, Michigan, back in the 1940s. And the company didn't quite take off, as the movie explores, for lots of reasons. But to this day, Jay Leno owns a Tucker Torpedo, keeps it up. It was ahead of its day in many ways. And this is a movie that it didn't find its audience, as they say, back in the 80s. But it was genuinely, like, you know, I saw it in the movie theater. Everybody in the theater loved it. And it gets you behind the story. Jeff Bridges plays Preston Tucker. And I believe, you know, exhibit E or F or G of why Francis Ford Coppola continued to make really good movies into the 80s, while back then the political climate was he's had it, he's all washed up, Apocalypse Now was this white elephant, and everything since has been downhill. You can even find, I read a book called The Cinema of Loneliness by the critic Robert Kolker, and the edition I had was like from the early 90s, and I guess it was a study of a bunch of people, Spielberg, Arthur Penn of all people, Coppola was one of them. And by the 90s, he had dropped Coppola out of that pantheon, said he was no, his subsequent movies had been such a disappointment. I want to say these disappointments include Peggy Sue Got Married, a genuine moneymaker, a big hit, as was The Outsiders, another big hit. He made Rumblefish, which is one of my favorite movies, definitely an acquired taste, but an art film for teenagers. He was really trying and making interesting stuff. The Cotton Club is another really, really fun movie. And I think Coppola continued to do well, and he continues to work, right? He's got a movie coming up.
Yeah, so it's funny because you said it's a crowd pleaser, and it certainly is, because I loved it. But it's funny, it's a crowd pleaser about a crowd pleaser who couldn't please the crowd when it came out in 1988.
Yeah. And, you know, it has this consciously old-timey style where it's telling you the story as if you're getting it off newsreels, and there'll be, you know, this sort of screen wipes via a wall with two people talking on the phone and things like that. It's really done in this classic style. And yeah, he's a master of it, right? Who can do it the way he can?
I loved all that. So that was if I give my overall take on the movie for seeing it for the show, I loved it. It was a portrait of the artist as a car designer. And that's what the whole movie's about. Like, I love how it starts as a newsreel, right? Like, it reminds you of Citizen Kane when you get the fake newsreel. But then the whole movie is like that. Like, the whole movie is one big commercial for this guy. He reminded me of what William Wordsworth called the Happy Warrior. He has a poem called The Happy Warrior. And that's what, like, you keep waiting to find out his dark side, but he doesn't. He has like a couple parts where he throws stuff, like Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
He's not a drunk. He doesn't like have an affair with somebody.
No, it's interesting. And, you know, I think the movie, it's Hollywood. I think it's probably like in the middle of the continuum for how well it sticks to the known facts of history. But Jeff Bridges is like, you know, I mean, first of all, he's never been more handsome, right? You look at Jeff Bridges, man, I can't believe anybody looks like this. And he's just never been more charismatic. I mean, he's fun through the whole movie. You root for him. And, you know, as you may know, Tucker Corporation is not around today and not putting out EVs. So, you know, the story doesn't really go his way.
Right.
But, you know, he...
But he fights the tide, right?
Yeah.
It's like that's watching Young Mr. Lincoln by John Ford. Like, you already know how it ends, but Henry Fonda doesn't.
Right.
I love what you said about he was never so handsome, because you may know this, you may not know this, but do you know who the original, who was Coppola's original choice when he first started thinking of this movie? Who did he want to play Preston Tucker?
Well, if he wanted him to look like Preston Tucker, it probably would have been like Bruno Kirby or maybe Frederick Forrest.
Nope, it was Marlon Brando. He wanted Brando to play Tucker.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
Okay. You know what? By the 90s, like, you would get the parish bulletin at St. Peter and Paul's Church in San Francisco, and there would be a thing like, Francis cooks for North Beach. And I'd be like, wow, this is what Coppola is up to these days, like doing a fundraiser just for people in San Francisco. And, you know, he was still making really good stuff. And another reason to support him is, he was standing up for Brando till the end.
He
always supported Brando.
Till the end. So before we go to part two, I want to get your reaction to this. What I loved about it was, you know, it's another good guy versus the suits movie, like Ford versus Ferrari, which we've done on the show, which we love, right? It's like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I thought if Coppola had a time machine, he would have totally said, all right, get me Jimmy Stewart. Like, I'm getting Jimmy Stewart to play Preston Tucker. And the other vibe I got from it, and then this blew my mind, was that the whole time I'm watching it, like, you mentioned all the wipes and like when they're talking on the phone, phone, like with, and you could see both of them through the wall, is that it felt like a musical. Like I kept it, at any moment they could break into song, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Martin Landau should have a song called like "I Caught Your Dreams," right? When the Tuckerettes come out, that should be the like a showstopper.
Yeah,
what I,
yeah.
What I learned was, it was originally conceived as a musical. I just happened to read that this morning, looking up some fun facts about the movie. And eventually, like, they started writing, they had Betty Kondoff and Adolph Green and Leonard Bernstein. They all got together for a week at Coppola's house.
Wow.
And eventually, though, they dropped it and just did it straight. And so what made me think that was that, you know, like I said, the movie wants you to get caught up in Tucker's like joie de vivre. And like, we know it's not going to end well, but we admire him for beating the odds of history, like, and trying that. And that's a good, that's an old movie trope that I think we all respond to.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, one of the suits who's putting him down is an uncooperative Michigan senator played by none other than Jeff Bridges'
his dad. Yeah. What would Freud say about that?
Welcome to part two, where we discuss a key scene or favorite moment in the movie. Dan, what was yours?
So mine is when Martin Landau tells him he can't be involved anymore. He's got to leave and resign because he's ashamed of what happened when he went to jail for bank fraud. And he tells him that story and he says, my mother used to say to me, don't get too close to people or you'll catch their dreams. And she was really trying to say you'll catch their germs, but it comes out you'll catch their dreams. And that runs the risk of being a little sentimental. But I think it works in this movie because that's what the movie's about. The movie's all about catching Preston Tucker's dreams and getting caught up in his enthusiasm. And I thought to myself, well, this movie isn't just about car makers, right? It's about like, it's about the enthusiasm of something you love. And it reminded me of like teachers we loved, because like they got us caught up, we caught their dreams, right? Like you didn't care about Shakespeare or Samuel Johnson or something. And then you have a teacher and that teacher gets you to catch their dreams. It reminded me of like what podcasting is about, right? Like we're doing this right now because we really like this movie and we want to talk about it. And you want to like share your enthusiasm with other people. I mean, you and I, this is kind of funny. You and I will, out of the blue, unsolicited, mail each other books. Just unasked for it. We just mail each other books. Like, so why would you do that? It's because like you're trying to get someone else to catch your dreams and to get caught up in your enthusiasm. And I think the movie, like Coppola wants that to happen, like with his viewers. And I think that's the key line of the movie for me.
Yeah. It's and you know, there are certain folks who actually can do that. There's the famous reality distortion field around.
Right.
Steve Jobs,
right.
And he clearly is that type of person who can, you know, kind of motivate you.
Yeah.
Mine is a scene that you alluded to a little bit in the first part, which is at one point, Tucker has a bad moment. He's hunched over trying to get, you know, the gasket to fit onto the valve or whatever it is on the prototype car that he's building with all of his guys. He has like an extended family of, you know, ne'er-do-well mechanics and so forth working on the car with him. And, you know, that's not working. Finds out he's being investigated by the Senate. He's getting sued. Martin Landau's in legal trouble, all this sort of thing. And somebody comes in with some new bad news and he does lose it. He blows up and throws something across the garage. And then he turns back around, all in one take, turns back to the camera, and you can see him put the smile back on his face. He turns like he's you know, ready to grab, and then he turns, like looks around everybody and just perks up. You see the smile come back onto, you know, it's Jeff Bridges' $1 million smile. And you just feel like this is what this guy's going through. Like that, right. You know. What we just saw is what's going on inside, and that's what's reality. Right. And he is there saying, like, I'm going to keep the smile on, because if we do make it, it's because of the smile.
That's what leadership is that it's not to draw people into your own misery and your frustrations, because you can't inspire anybody that way.
Exactly. Right. Right.
And we live in a world now where I think people are invited to commiserate and look for, oh my, I'm so traumatized. The world is so rough. And don't you feel sorry for me? But like Preston Tucker wasn't about to tweet about his miseries. That's what he was about the million. That's how you build cars. It's the $1 million smile.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a little bit, this will all be explained in the movie, but he had invented a pretty interesting armored car for the army during the war. He and the torpedo had, among other things, there was a center headlight that would react to your turning the wheel and turn so that, you know, you would light up the intersection as you're going around. I don't know if that would have made any difference to your car. I'm always curious. I always feel like, hey, I wish I had that on the car right now while I'm driving at night, see what it's like. I think, you know, it had seatbelts. That's right. Addressed in the movie too.
Because the suits, of course, don't want seatbelts to make them more evil. Because
like, yeah, right. Right. It creates the impression that the automobile is unsafe.
Right.
So, yeah. So, you know, it for all these reasons, all of this makes it, you know, it has the right combination, interesting story, the right people telling the story in the right way.
What did you make of, there's a part where he's walking through some hallway somewhere and they have posters of Edison. And of course, there's one of Nikola Tesla. And it's impossible to watch this now in 2024 and not think of Elon Musk building cars.
I know. Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, you know, I always say nothing in movies happens accidentally. Like they actually used a compressor to make sure that Marion Crane's car would bob for a second in the bog before sinking. Just so that you would be on edge when Indiana Jones is running from the Peruvians and he's got the dust coming off him, you know, that's planned too. Right. But that's something that you have to say, well, it's really an unplanned Easter egg in this movie now that we have seen somebody who's like Tucker and in a much more of a niche market that we don't know whether it has a future, but he has managed to do, you know, to stay alive. Challenging the big three, which, as you'll learn from this movie, is not so easy.
So welcome back. In part three, we always talk about the title, which seems kind of self-explanatory, or the ending and what we make of it, or the big takeaways of the movie. So, Tim, what do you got about the ending?
Well, I was actually going to talk about the title.
Go ahead.
The Man and His Dream. We're not just talking about Tucker. The political environment I described from the 80s when Coppola was considered a has-been or an embarrassment in Hollywood, that was already well established by the time this movie came out. And you kind of can't get around reading this movie as an allegory for Coppola's struggles against the Hollywood machine.
Right.
And I think it is important to see it that way. It doesn't affect your watching of the movie or anything like that. It's interesting to note that The Aviators in many ways covers a lot of the same kind of thematic territory of this movie. And Howard Hughes figures into this movie as well.
And you love The Aviator. You love that movie.
Yeah. No, I love The Aviator. I was a skeptic of The Aviator at first, but it has very much grown on me over time. But that is a way to think about it. And I want to say again, Coppola, even into the 21st century, well, I don't know what this thing is he's got coming out, but he continues to make these movies that even if you don't like him, you have to say these are genuine art films. He is trying to do something with movies still. And so my hat's off to Francis.
The thing you said about his dream, that reminds me of what I kept thinking as I watched this was I kept thinking about how we take him for granted. We just, you know, he's always been around. He's like a great director, right? And I kept thinking, like, what drew him to this story, right? So he started thinking about this in the early 70s. He wasn't like, this is before Apocalypse Now. He's already thinking about this. But I kept thinking to myself, well, what drew him to this story? Like, and there's like little things like, you know, his dad, Carmine, was one of the original investors. Like, there's little like tiny fun things like that. But to undertake a whole movie about a car designer and a company that goes nowhere where they only make, you know, 50 cars, to prove a court case or, you know, to prove that he can do it. Like what drew him to that? And that's the thing that kept coming back to me. And that's kind of like, it's like artistic integrity. And that's what you were just talking about. Like the guy didn't make Godfather 4, you know, or you know, he could have done a million other things like that, but he didn't.
Yeah. No, I mean, when we say crowd pleaser, you don't mean like a Hollywood sellout movie.
Right.
We mean it's like, it is an actual movie that has, wants to interact with an audience the way the movie's supposed to.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny that he conceived it that early. But, you know, I guess throughout his career, he has been a guy, you know, to look to for this kind of thing. Because if you ever, so I don't know where you'll find it, maybe on the commentary track for Patton or something like that. But he wrote the opening scene with Patton in front of the flag giving the speech. And the studio thought it was too weird. It was like abstract and all this kind of thing. And he didn't even know Patton had been made into a movie until they gave it to Zoe Trope to edit. And he was seeing the footage of it that he realized they had made his script. And he says, you know, something to keep in mind if you're starting out, the things you get fired for are often the things they give you awards for.
Well, that's also like, you know, the story, I'm sure you heard this, is that after he made The Godfather, of course, everyone in the world wanted him to make Godfather 2, which of course is great. But do you remember his condition? Do you know what he said? He said, I'll make Godfather 2 on one condition. Do you know what it was?
Surprise me.
You have to let me make The Conversation.
Yeah.
Isn't it great? So yeah, that's why and of course they were like, fine, make your little whatever, you know, right. Nixonian paranoia movie about it, which of course is a brilliant, brilliant movie.
People are right now, something just dropped on Netflix like last night that rips off The Conversation.
Oh, 100%, 100%, right? But it's funny that he was like, yeah, I'll do Godfather 2. So he's always been interested in like telling these stories that he finds interesting. Like that's what's so cool about what you just said, is that he's like Preston Tucker. And sometimes you get caught up in his excitement and sometimes audiences don't, but he's going to keep trying to build the cars. So speaking of his enthusiasm, my big takeaway about the ending was Ralph Waldo Emerson said once, and I always use this in my classes, he said, nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. Real famous line, right? Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. So I think what's cool about that applied to this movie is it asks you, well, what did Tucker achieve? So what did he achieve? Was that like, you know, at least I tried. Yeah, the big three got me. You know, the Senator Ferguson kept me down. But you know what? Like, at least I tried.
Well, he got acquitted.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's true. Yeah. So he wins the court case, but he loses the company.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he kept trying, right? Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah, and he died 6 years after that happened. So I just think it's funny that I think that Coppola making this movie was a total Preston Tucker move.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're right. The fight is what matters. And hold that tiger.
Hold that tiger. So thanks for listening, everybody. And great pick, Tim. If you'd like to follow us on X, speaking of Tesla, you can follow us at 15minfilm. You can also follow us on Letterboxd. Let us know what we should watch next. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.